Action number 5591590, Phil Plowright, Reel 8.
Mr. Plowright, Reel 8. You were telling me how you were on the beach during these landing craft, just having swimming parties while you were doing exercise and things, and some nurses arrived. Could you tell me that story?
Oh, yes. All these guys were romping about the beach in our area with in the nude or in their cellular drawers, and a wagon drove on, an ambulance, I remember, drove onto the beach. It was a huge beach and flat, of course, and these nurses piled out. You never saw such a scramble in your life. All the blokes running to get the clothes on, and the nurses were, I think, two or three, at least 300 yards away. But people panicked and soon got their clothes back on again.
Anything else about that time training in Near Berserker?
No, nothing else happened. And eventually we were marshalled onto boats, and like small troop ships, quite a lot of them. They were American. Just forget how many there'd be onto a boat, and we pushed off and went to, again, we didn't know where we were going at that time, but we found out subsequently that we were landing at Salerno.
This is September 43.
Right. And there was a storm in the Med, and we were very seasick. And we pulled into what we now know to be Sicily. We pulled into calmer waters and then pushed off again from Sicily. We went across again, and we were in, some were in landing craft infantry, some were in landing craft LCVs, and we found out, of course, that we were going to Salerno, landing at Salerno Beach. That was quite a nasty experience, because the Americans were working these landing craft. They were crewing these things, and the shore batteries opened up, and the blokes diving off long before they got to water that they could get their feet on. It was quite a bit of a shambles, really, I think. But you can understand. Well, it was so unexpected. One minute we were proceeding along, and the next bit there were shells landing at us, and the Americans were shouting bailout and the equivalent, you know.
Was your ship actually hit?
No, it wasn't. No. But men did, in fact, jump. They were very low, these things. They weren't high up. They were quite low. You could almost touch the water over the side. But they were getting out and ready to go in. And the water was quite deep on occasions.
What did you do?
I got out and kept me weapons dry and moved towards the shore. With my platoon, they were spread out with me, round about. We hadn't got Morris then, the bloke who came. He'd been sick or something. He'd been away sick, and we had another officer whose name I can't remember. I wasn't there very long.
Were there any characters that you were aware of in your platoon, because you'd lived and worked with them? Were there any particular people you remember?
Yes, I can remember quite a lot of them for what they were. In particular, a man from Horncastle. He came from the Lincolnshire Regiment. His name was Harry Briggs, and he was the platoon commander's batman. He was very, very much older than me, for instance, he smoked a pipe. He'd only got two teeth at the front. He had all the rest moved out in some way. He'd got a family back home, and they were real Lincolnshire, wonderful wit and steady and reliable. He was a... particularly remember him.
Then, any others?
Well, to elaborate on Briggs, Harry Briggs, he was to play quite a large part in my life in later years, in later times, later actions, that is. Not years, in later actions and events. So I remember him particularly. I had a lot of decent lads in the platoon, and they were really good. I had one or two bad ones as well.
What made a bad lad, if you see what I mean?
Well, for instance, I got one of these guys that had been... come abroad with us and come straight from the detention barracks onto the troop ship.
You mentioned him.
Yes.
What was he like?
This particular one, he was very good looking. I remember that particularly. And he had a very easy, affable manner. But he'd not conducted himself very well, as I remember, when we'd gone on to a position or moved on to a position, and we have a count up. We used to, what do we call it? We called it, anyway, we had to take stock of everyone that was there. And he'd always arrive afterwards. This happened quite a lot, especially in Italy, and later on when we were more mobile, and if we'd attacked a position, he would arrive after everyone had been accounted for, or we knew where we were.
The implication was that he dropped out in some way or shelved.
Yes, he did, yes. He was never sort of there when you needed him.
And that was the sort of thing that a bad soldier would do.
Yes, yes. There were one or two in life, in subsequent actions, that we couldn't rely on, but for the same reasons.
Did you have any of the older men whose nerve had gone?
No, not that I remember. There were people dropping out all the time. There was illness, and people had to go to hospital for illness, and we had an outbreak, and because I got it, I got yellow jaundice.
When did you get that?
I got that soon after Salerno.
We'll come to that then. Mm. So, what about your... did you have sergeants in charge of your sections, your platoon sections, or did you...
No, they were corporals and lance corporals.
Any of them?
Yes, there was Smudger Smith. He was a famous character. He was a Northamptonshire lad. He'd come from Northamptonshire. There was another one.
Why was he so well known?
Because he was lively and cheerful, rather than morose and miserable.
So just a nice bloke.
Yeah, just a decent bloke. Yes.
What was the other one?
There was another fella from Birmingham called Sheen, Corporal Sheen. There was...
What was he like?
He was a similar bloke to Smudger Smith. Bright, but he was a Brummie. And then we had characters in the platoon like Joe Dudley. He was a Brummie. He was a sniper. In fact, he carried the sniper rifle. There was Ernie Moss, who was a Ben Gunner. He was a good, reliable bloke. Absolutely trustworthy and steady and really good. And then there was... in fact, there were some really good ones at that time.
Would you know them all by name?
Yes, yes, I did, yes.
And would you take an interest in their welfare?
Well,
when they had trouble at home or something like that?
Well, when you had time to talk, we used to talk about things like that.
So now, just stepping back into the story, you just landed at Salerno. Was the beach under fire much when you got ashore?
Yes, there was shelling from positions in the hills overlooking Salerno. And we obviously we had to get off the beaches and get into these foothills, and we met fire. There was spasmodic fire, there was rifle fire and artillery fire, machine gun fire. There were Italians that were surrendering. They were manning positions, but they were surrendering pretty well straight away, if you like. But the Germans, they were the hardcore of the defences. The Italian government capitulated, did it not, about this time?
Yes.
And they were only held together by the Germans, I think, who were sticking rifles in their backs and saying, stop where you are and keep firing, to the Italians. Anyway, we moved on, our platoon moved on, and we went up into these mountains, if you call them mountains, and we became cut off.
How would that happen?
Well, we were in contact with... we'd only got the 18 set. Sorry, the 38 set. The 38 set.
That's the radio.
That's the radio, yes. The 18 set was the big one, but we'd got these ones that issued to platoons, which was a 38 set. And we'd lost the frequency, and we couldn't get it. Thought, well...
Now, the frequency for who?
For the company commander. He was in contact with the battalion, and we were in platoons. We were in contact with the company commander, and we lost it. So we pushed on without a great deal of bother, and we stopped in overlooking a valley, and there was a single track railway down in the bottom with a entering into a tunnel. And while we were there, we saw a train, a locomotive, pull out of this tunnel with a gun on it, fired around and went back into the tunnel. And as soon as it got back into the tunnel, our artillery ranged on this gun and was banging it all around where the railway track was. And of course, this gun of the Germans was back in the tunnel again. But we caught some of the backlash from our own guns. And we reckon it was the Aurora that was doing that, the supporting cruiser. Anyway, there was skirmishing, and eventually more and more troops.
What type of fighting was it, the skirmishing? I mean, what would a typical incident be in this?
A German strong point, manned with perhaps an 88mm gun and machine guns, German machine guns, MG-42s, MG-38s, and so on. And often a pincer, if it was a daylight attack, we'd probably do a pincer movement, support and fire and support. And fire and movement and so on.
Under the control of your platoon officer?
Yes. Or company commander. And prisoners rounded up, and that was it. All the time there were people backing us up. And shortly afterwards, tanks started to get ashore as well. So from then on, up towards Naples, we had tanks in support as well. And aircraft. I don't remember much details about that then, except all this skirmishing and prisoners, and we lost people, obviously. We lost a quantity of blokes as well.
During the skirmishing, I mean, was the battalion fighting as a battalion, or was it company level, or was it really the platoon level, or even section level?
We were fighting as a battalion. But the country was so restrictive for operating whole battalion movements. They were individuals, but under the control of the battalion commander, so that one company might be doing an attack onto a certain position, another company or even a platoon would be on another position. There would be the headquarter company in support with the Bren gun carriers. They'd be in a different position. But because it was restricted by the hills and the terrain, a lot of the positions that we attacked were defensive positions being held by the Germans as long as they could, and then hoping to break away and man others further back. So it was nearly all footwork. We were marching, skirmishing, night attacks, day attacks, river crossings and so on. It was much different to the, as I suppose, the Normandy operations were, where the land was easily worked for the tank, easily able to use tanks and so on.
Do you remember any incidents that happened, that, you know, in particular, either happened to you or that you saw happen, that you want to tell us about?
Saw so many things, it's difficult to, at this stage, normal, if you like, if such a thing can be called normal. We moved on, and eventually I arrived at, we arrived at Caserta, and we had a rest there. The battalion got together, and we had a concert. I remember that particularly well because Wally appeared, and we had this concert at Caserta.
How did you organise the concert?
The Padre got started mainly. Padre Semple, Captain Semple, we used to call him the Padre. And he said, could we do something? And we all got together and we had a concert. And one thing it does, I remember with humour, we were in a little village near Caserta, little hilltop village, poverty stricken, narrow cobbled streets, only a tiny place, and that we got in this billet and it was raining very hard, and the water was coming through a hole in the roof where it had been shelled, and it was dripping through, and there was an old lady, was it was her place, and she'd had the troops thrust upon her, obviously, and we were just in this empty room with blankets or whatever we could get just to make a, and the rain was dropping in, and so one of the lads in the platoon said, "Possiblare, mendare, holare in roofare." And the old lady said, "See." So he said, "There we are, we can speak Italian." And that was the first indication of any sort of humour. This bloke came out with this thing. It was a bit of a joke, and I always remember it.
Just getting back to the concert, but how would you organise it then? I mean, you'd been asked by a Semple if you'd do it. Mm. So how did you set about putting a show on?
Well, we got together. There was always Johnny Robinson. He was a singer, storeman in our company. Wally and Eddie Hallett, they were there. There was one or two others. Tom baritone, he used to turn up. So anyway, when we got the word that we were going to put a concert, we got the nucleus of of artists, and then it was just up to us to put it all together and make a bit of a show of it.
And about how long would the show last?
Oh, about an hour.
And what sort of acts would you put on? I mean, you know, how would you divide your hour up between the acts?
There would be sketches. There would be Hallett and Binch doing the comedian crosstalk stuff. There'd be ably assisted by Robinson and Mackay, and then there would be solos, baritone. Tom Scott, that was his name, baritone. He used to sing. He was a Welshman, and he sang "Land of My Fathers." I remember that well. and they were all quite decent turns, really. And I think at Caserta they'd actually found a piano. It was a bit clanky, but it was great to be able to play a piano again. So that sort of made it well for me. But we sort of bucked things up a bit.
And who would come and see it? About how many?
As many as the place where we were holding it would be held. Sometimes there'd only be 40 or 50. I don't think everybody necessarily wanted to come to a concert. But people did used to show up, and it always seemed to be incumbent upon us to make some sort of entertainment. And the padre, he always tried anyway. And there was a church, so there was always a church service. I played the accordion for church service, and I remember when the campaign ended in Africa, we had a church service, and there was a visiting somebody or other, and I'd got the accordion, and the men were all standing outside in the open, on the sand. There was nowhere to go, and Padre Semple was a bit of a nervous type anyway. He wasn't a bold and that sort of thing. He was quite a gentle sort of bloke. And one of the hymns was "For All the Saints Who From Their Labours Rest." And I'd got nowhere to put the hymn book or the music, but I knew it well enough because I'd played church organ years before. And I'm playing away there, and I'd looked at the hymn book before, and I reckon there were, I think, the 6 verses we'd got to play. And I played one too many. And I played the whole verse by myself. And this visiting bigwig was there, and they all stood round in bewilderment while I played an extra verse of "For All the Saints." But they all sang the Amen at the end, at least. So I suppose we got a little bit of salvation out of that. So there were people that would enjoy it, and then they came. Others wouldn't bother. That was on one of the occasions that we were able to come out of the line and rest up for a day or two, so we'd have the chance to do something like that.
What's the next incident you remember? That was a Caserta.
The next incident was Casino, wasn't it? Casino followed then. The Volturno crossing.
What do you remember of that?
Remember crossing the Volturno. We weren't fired on directly, but the river was running high, and it was very cold, and the river was running high, and we got very wet.
And did you cross in? Did you have boats?
No, we got across. Made your way across the best way you could. There were no. It was not all that wide. It wasn't a huge, wide river, and under the normal conditions of Italy, it would only be a few feet deep. But because there'd been a lot of heavy rain, it was quite deep in places, and that was where Morris, who had been, came back to us just before that, and we went after Caserta, and we went in action on the Volturno, and there was a shot rang out, and Morris was shouting and everything, and he reckoned that he'd been fired on. He'd got a wound in his arm, but there were no shots fired at that time, so you take your pick. We never saw Morris again.
So there was a suspicion it was a self-injury.
Oh, indeed. He never comes to any of these things, and yet I saw him after the war, and it took him all his time to recognise me. It was in the old Flying Horse in Nottingham. Called him for a drink, and there was Morris leaning on the bar, and he barely recognised me. So he wasn't all that chuffed to see me, no doubt. And you'd never been to any reunions or anything like that.
Now, who replaced Morris?
Who did I have next? Glover next. Michael Glover. And he came from the Inns of Court Regiment.
What was he like?
He was a wimp. He was about 6 foot six and, oh goody chaps, and all that stuff. He was a really nice bloke, but quite a wimp. I shouldn't say that really, because he turned out to be quite a famous man, a broadcaster, and been on telly with in some form or other on antiques and some of these really high-brow stuff, you know. I'm not quite sure what it was, but he was quite notorious, quite famous, really. But he wasn't a very good soldier. But he did all right. We were up on Casino and...
So that was the next thing you remember up the vault?
Yeah, yeah.
What were the positions you remember taking up on Casino?
We were on Mount Camino. That was... the monastery was... overlooked all everything around there, of course. It overlooked Mount Camino, but we were on the reverse slopes. But the approaches from... to Mount Camino were quite open. They could be seen from the monastery. And people were moving up there, and the artillery under direction from the monastery were getting plenty of hits. But we were dug in, and we built sangars, stone sangars out of stones, put a gas cape over and crouched in there until night time. And
presumably you couldn't get down into it. Was rock?
Yes, you couldn't dig. Dig at all.
I believe there was a lot of patrolling at that time.
Yes, yes.
Did you go on? And
yes, we went on patrols into Casino, into the town.
What do you remember of a typical patrol? How would you prepare for it?
We were given instructions from the company commander that so and so platoon would send out a patrol. A fighting patrol, a reconnaissance patrol, and report back. We also had to man a observation post in the town, or near the on the outskirts of the town, and in direct view from the monastery. And that was there for 24 hours. And you
would that be standing patrol? Suppose they call them, or was that different?
No, that was a observation post. It was in a granary. On the upper floor of a granary, and we occupied that at darkness hours, and we weren't relieved until darkness the following night.
And what would you do during that time? What could you see?
We got binoculars, and we had to log everything that we saw in the monastery, and we'd got a radio.
And what kind of thing would you see?
Very little, actually. You saw sometimes saw a flash of movement, but they were observing, the Germans were observing, and they were calling on artillery. And but a lot of their work, I think, artillery work, was a bit guesswork. It wasn't precise, because they seemed to put down fire at certain times in certain places. And we used to get air bursts, shrapnel burst in the air, and so they knew we were in these sangars, and they were trying to get at us that way.
Now, when you were in the OP post, how many would go?
There'd be three of us.
So you'd be in charge?
Yes, yes.
And what would you be looking through? I mean, was it the post disguised in the granary?
There was an open window. The glass had long gone from it. But the window was a certain height, and the background was dark, we would take a bit of spotting from up there, if you like. We didn't actually get fired on in the observation post, so... we assumed that we hadn't been spotted.
And you just spend the day,
yes,
taking it in turns.
Yeah,
or
just
you all watch.
Oh, we only got one set of binoculars, but so we did take it in turns to keep manning, to make sure anything happened.
That was OP duty. Now, you mentioned fighting patrols or reconnaissance patrols. Mm. If you're going out on one of those, how would you prepare for that?
There was a patrol, that would be a section, and there'd be a normal complement of arms. If it was a fighting patrol, there'd be rifles and machine guns, small machine guns, Tommy guns, and